On this episode, I'm in conversation with Tom Rawlinson. Hello and welcome to the QI Guy podcast. Your soundtrack kicked us off there, so this is an in conversation with episode. Slight change from the last two or three weeks, where we've of course been focusing on those kind of short, sharp, micro episodes. But my guest today, Tom, reached out on Twitter at the end of last year, said he'd love to come on the podcast. I did the shout out on X, formerly Twitter, looking for guests, looking for people to come on and discuss quality improvement, and Tom reached out. So we eventually got together and we had a really great conversation. Tom, again, slightly different from our usual guests in that he has worked in healthcare, but he's now working in private industry supporting healthcare. So he brings a slightly different perspective in terms of the methods and how to apply them. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Tom.
So welcome back to the podcast, and I'm delighted to be joined by Tom Rawlinson. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you, Jonathan. Yeah.
It's been a wee while in the making, getting to record this episode. We've been messaging backwards and forwards, so I'm glad to finally be talking to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And massive fan of all the work you've done so far, listen to your podcast on a regular basis. So yeah, I feel quite honoured just to be on the podcast with you. So look forward to getting into it with you.
That's very kind. That's very kind. So this is going to be slightly different again, because and we've kind of moved away slightly from speaking to people who work in quality improvement roles in healthcare organisations, because you work for a different kind of organisation, a private organisation that kind of does contract work and supports healthcare organisations. So can you tell us a wee bit about how, I mean, so your background and maybe how you come into that, and then, you know, what does that look like on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, of course. So I'll give you the timeline, because I suppose that will help with context in terms of who I am and kind of where I am now. So I began life as a HCA, so it was healthcare assistant for a little bit, straight out of university, was interested in healthcare from the off, really. My undergraduate was looking at, well, medical science, so generally how the body works and kind of how drugs are developed, that type of stuff as well. And then was really interested in kind of moving to the healthcare industry. On from that, really just got a job, as most students do, and essentially worked for this organization which largely looked at working with medical device organizations that make medical devices. So it was working with them to improve the usability of those particular devices using kind of human factors, you know, usability tests, and then looking at how we drive the adoption of these medical devices into the NHS, because there's old bit of literature really, but there's around 17 years between getting some evidence that something works to something actually being implemented. So like a lot of the work that we're doing, we're looking at the human factors, but also that development pathway as well. So did that for a little bit. I worked in Northwest London for a little bit, so where I initially got introduced to quality improvement, pure quality improvement as it were, really, where we had a particular QI process, introduction to the model for improvement, PDSAs, process mapping, drive diagrams, so on and so forth. And we would go out, we'd work with individual teams within organisations on a particular project that they would request funding for, but they'd also get our support from a so-called expert, you know, I say in inverted commas, on those individual bits. So that was my first introduction, and that was like a light being turned on for me. It was like, oh, I see how this works now, I see how it can work. And I think that sort of really enthused me for kind of progressing that career in that particular area. So then I moved on to an actual transformation team within an organization. So, and that's where I initially got introduced to Lean. So in that organization I was working for, we had our own kind of internal transformation team, but there was we were one of the several sites which adopted Vital Signs, which was sort of the iteration from the Virginia Mason partnership which had taken place across the different NHS trusts in England as well. So I led kind of value stream mapping, value stream analysis piece of work looking at frailty in that organization, where again sort of that built on my knowledge of quality improvement, which I thought I had at the time, but it's sort of iterated over as well. So did that for a little bit in that acute provider, and then moved across to the ambulance service. So took all that lovely learning. I think whilst I was at Derby Hospital, which was the provider I was doing my master's. So learnt lots of stuff like quality and patient safety improvement from that perspective, but then took that across to the ambulance service and almost tried to approach improvement from a sort of like in a stealth way. I think that it was one of those things that I found that from an ambulance service perspective, they had little exposure to that sort of structured quality improvement approach. And so really what I didn't want to come in with loads of like, oh, we're going to use A3s and we're going to do value stream mapping and we're going to do like, look, how we're going to measure the value and stuff like that, and rather took the principles and applied that via stealth. And essentially I was looking at how we could reduce avoidable conveyances to the emergency department, and we had a rip-roaring success from that perspective as well. But was my again took a lot of the stuff rather than using one particular QI approach, but then sort of melded all the learning I had from a human factors perspective, from a lean perspective, from a QI perspective to apply into that particular setting. That goes back to your original question now, which is that post the ambulance service, I know, so longer timeline there, but I moved across to the private sector post that, and I think I suppose motivation for doing that really was to understand kind of what it was. You know, like I'd heard about consultancies and that type of stuff before, but was really interested to see how that model operates in terms of driving improvement. And one of the things I say is, look, from my perspective, like my key interest is how we improve individuals, teams and organizations, and like healthcare consultancy is just another way of doing that, really. So since being there, I focused a lot on urgent emergency care, and I've worked with a number of different trusts since I've been there. So overall I've worked with maybe about 10 different individual trusts and providers as well. One of the biggest things I've been looking at is the quality management system implementation. Okay. So again, sort of takes lean and then builds on that again in terms of that organizational approach. So that's I suppose a bit of a timeline how I got into that private sector.
So it sounds quite varied, and I think there's more than a few I've kind of had that path within quality improvement, working in different organisations at different levels. Interesting to hear you talk about moving from a kind of healthcare provider into what we would call here in Scotland maybe a special board like your ambulance service, and how that that QI knowledge kind of drop off. You know, as I kind of describe it, or that awareness and understanding kind of drops off. That's quite interesting that happens probably everywhere. Hospitals seem to be the kind of main, this is where we'll go and teach and this is where we'll do programs. And if you go to the ambulance service or some other national care providers, it's less developed. But interesting then you made that move to the private sector. I'm an NHS public service person my whole career, so yeah. And I've been tempted to apply for the private sector a few times, but never quite did it. So you're a braver man than me. You mentioned lean there a lot, and what we're kind of going to talk about was also kind of approaches to kind of QI teaching. So I'd be kind of interested to hear, you know, as you know, what's your definition of lean, and kind of what are you kind of bringing to the table? Because obviously there is lots of different methods within healthcare around change and improvement. There's the model for improvement, associate of process improvements, kind of IHI type stuff. There's human factors and ergonomics. There's service design. There's transformational change. And lean is another one I would throw in there. And up here in Scotland, lean probably doesn't have as strong a foothold as it does in other industries, in terms of being a predominant kind of method for approach. So could you give us a wee quick overview of lean, and then maybe begin to talk about your approach of how you use that in healthcare?
course. And you know, I'd start off by saying I've got experience with lean as well. I definitely won't say I was a lean expert. I know you had Bradley Miller on here before, and he seems like, you know, the Don when it comes to all things lean related. I think first off, I'll go into what I've done and my approach. I'd probably start off by saying that, like, lean gets a bad rep, I think. But I think probably the name of it doesn't really help. But I think that it's largely misunderstood that, you know, lean applied effectively is just a high performing organization. So you know, the lean emanates from, you know, ultimately this is how Toyota operated, and you know, this was their way of kind of being a, you know, world leader when it came to the automotive industry. And it was a set of observations. People go, well, this is what you can do to be an effective organization. Now, you know, ultimately people will go, well, you can't apply lean to healthcare because, you know, we don't sell cars here. We'll deal with people. But I think largely, like, it's understanding what the principles are from a lean perspective, because ultimately it's improving value for the customer. Is what you're looking at, being one of the pillars, which is that continuous removal of waste, but also respect for people, which is that, you know, having an effective workforce who, you know, feel are comfortable in the work that they're doing and supported to do that as well. So, you know, ultimately, like, who can't get behind those principles? That's, you know, it's amazing. And, you know, I think given what has been achieved with Toyota, I think they obviously were an effective organization in what they did. And I think that trying to apply that into the NHS, I think, just has certain nuances. So, you know, largely what I've experienced and what I've done before is kind of lean implementation, looking at that kind of value stream analysis. So it's, you know, can we agree, like, what we want to improve, you know, what is value for the customer, and what is that particular process we want to look at, identify where there's waste within that particular process or pathway, how can you strip that out to make it a more effective flow. Other things might be creating pull systems and that type of stuff as well, but largely it's kind of like, well, how do you remove that waste, which, you know, that's a good thing. You know, do you want time to a particular patient to be 2 weeks, or do you want it to be 2 days? Or would you like it to be two days, wouldn't you? I think what it becomes synonymous with is kind of getting rid of people or saving money, which I think it tends to drop out the back end of it. But the other element that I've come across from a lean implementation perspective as well, which sort of takes it to another level, but is kind of more organizationally focused, is the quality management systems, which happen to get into, but I suppose that's you know, just a brief intro of my experience with it, I suppose.
It's interesting because I think different methodologies do get a different rap, as you say, and lean maybe gets a bad rap because you mentioned there the focus maybe becomes about saving money or being able to make processes so efficient that you can remove resources from them, whether that's people as well. But it's interesting because I always kind of say, if you strip away that kind of taxonomy that's created around some of the different improvements, so whether it's lean or an IHI approach or service design or whatever, they're kind of all aiming to do the same thing.
Absolutely.
You know, which is understand what it is you need to provide. You know, engage with your users and your staff to figure out what their needs and requirements are, and then look at whether it's generating ideas or whether it's, you know, in healthcare, lots of evidence and research, as you touched on earlier, look at what's in that body of work that you can then implement to meet the needs of the service within your envelope, whatever that may be, financial or otherwise. And the tools that we use are often very similar. Again, when you kind of drill down and you say, well, how do you do that? So it's process mapping, it's fishbone diagrams, it's you know, lots of different things that's shared.
And I think with that, you know, you're absolutely right. And sorry to butt in there, but, you know, ultimately, you know, QI or whatever you want to refer to it as, like, it was really great. I was in one of my first jobs, so there was a consultant I spoke to, and he was like, QI is just a Trojan horse for change. And I didn't really understand it at the time, but ultimately, like, it's a bit of a framework that people can hang on to be like, well, how would I do things a little bit differently? And I've always hung on to it, really, to be like, you know, ultimately what we're trying to do is get people to think differently. But it's just so messy, like what this, whatever it does in terms of your approach, whether it's lean, whether it's QSER, whether it's, you know, IHI, it gives them a bit of a methodical approach to kind of go, this is what I might do next, and this is how I want to bring people on board, and this is what I might test, and oh, I want to measure a bit of data here. And I think it's,
And I think that's so important, because particularly within healthcare, we're working with staff who that's not their primary job.
Yeah.
Their primary job is to treat and care for people. But what's interesting is that, again, if we kind of strip away that, the names of things, and we look at that process of understand what's wrong, come up with a plan, try that plan, review it to see if it's working. If it's not, make some changes. See, you know, review it again, see if it's working. If it is, let it go for a wee time, extend that period that you review it. That's probably a similar description to a pathway that a healthcare professional would take if they had a patient in front of them.
Yeah, and that, we use those examples as well. You know, one of the tools that we use is an A3, which is kind of like, what's your problem? What's your current situation? Like, what goal? What's your vision? Like, what's your root cause analysis? Like, diagnostic, and kind of what you can to measures, and then a few other bits as well. But, you know, we translated that into kind of how you would treat a patient. Like, you wouldn't ever just directly jump to a particular intervention without having done some tests and some diagnostics to begin with, and agree what where you're trying to get that patient towards as well. So, yeah, absolutely correct.
So you kind of mentioned the A3 tool there, which I don't actually think I've ever knowingly used the E3. I've seen it presented, and somebody's, I've stood in front of an E3 board, and somebody's kind of talked me through it, and I think it was from Virginia Mason. So can you tell me a wee bit more about how you would use the A3? Because it's almost kind of like a visual board, isn't it? And a kind of an improvement board that would maybe be up in a department or a ward. And how would staff use that specifically and interact with that?
Yeah, of course. So A3, it's I suppose simple, really. Like, originally when it was developed, it was to be put on an A3 piece of paper.
The idea. Literal name then.
Yeah, literal name. It's a super practical thing, really. And ultimately, it was that one of the execs at Toyota was like, oh, they're having these hundreds of pages of documents to read before meetings. He was like, I just want this on one page, so to digest it more than anything. But ultimately, usually it's kind of 8 steps, kind of going through the project pathway, like usually split into two halves, one side being the diagnostic phase and the other side being kind of the implementation phase. It takes you in itself through a bit of a quality improvement project itself, which is that, you know, you initially start by articulating what the problem is. So can you write down, you know, in 50 to 100 words what the problem you experience is? So, you know, is it that, you know, you're having excessive weights in ED, you know, you're not hitting the target, and kind of what is the impact of that? You know, we well know from the evidence now that patients waiting over 6 hours, there's a higher chance of mortality. So people are dying in ED as a result of waiting too long, and kind of what the potentially emotional impact as well. The scary places, especially with patients who, you know, might be frail and elderly or mental health, like they're places which, you know, are not always the greatest situation to be in for those particular people. So you can start to articulate what the problem statement is. Current situation is sort of your traditional, like, data analysis, your use of Pareto charts, your process mapping, chatting to staff. So really what's currently happening? So, you know, how does the service currently operate, or the process operate? So that's where you do all your traditional your work related to looking at that particular process or pathway. Box 3 is your vision and your goal. So an important distinction here really is that you set a almost like a generic vision for the future, or like aspirational. So where do you want to be on the horizon from that perspective, which might be, you know, nobody ever waiting any time in ED to see a clinician. And although that might seem like you're setting yourself up to fail, like it produces that kind of continuous improvement mindset, which is that you don't set one goal and then hit it and then never do it again. You're sort of constantly striving. Setting a SMART goal is the next bit, which is almost like, if you visualize it like trying to cross a river, now you're never going to cross the river just in one big jump. You're hopefully going to take small stepping stones to get to the across the river. If you try and achieve one big goal and it's too big, you're going to get swept away and kind of land in the water. So your SMART goal becomes almost towards that overarching vision, the small stepping stones that you can take to achieve something, which might be, you know, a certain percentage improvement in ED performance, or, you know, reduction in 12-hour waits and that type of stuff as well. So that's box three. Box four is kind of your root cause analysis. So, you know, traditionally you might use a fishbone diagram, kind of building on that. Really, you might be more scientific with it, which is kind of collecting data on those particular issues that you're focused on and really getting underneath what the true causes of the issues are related to your problem that you've mentioned as well. So, you know, I've used the fictitious example of ED performance, but might be a number of different reasons why patients are waiting a certain amount of time. So you delve into that. On the back of that, what you then do is, you know, using your five whys, as it would be, say, for example, translate that into your countermeasures or your sort of things that you want to test. So, you know, you understand what the initial concern is, you've gone through the root cause, and then you've identified what a countermeasure might be that you might want to test, in which case you move on to the kind of right hand side, which is the implementation bit. So, and this varies a little bit, but ultimately you're going to have a set of things that you're going to testing, which is your PDSAs, kind of how they're progressing. You're going to have some data just in terms of your performance charts, and you're going to have some kind of learning and some cost benefit analysis, so you can kind of reflect on how things are progressing from that perspective. But I use it in every piece of work I do now because it's generic.
Yeah, and it, there's a lot that you're kind of saying there, and I'm sure people that are listening and things sort of thinking, oh yeah, we do that, and we do that state and that stage, but they might not call it E3,
yeah.
You know, or they might not recognise that what they're doing is lean. If I think about descriptions of a kind of generic quality improvement journey, it kind of sounds quite like that.
Yeah.
You know, understand your problem, you know, define what it is you're going to do, you know, test and measure some stuff, and then how can you make that kind of business as normal. So it's interesting that we if we slap a label on things, people all of a sudden think, well, I don't know anything about that, or I can't do that.
Yeah, actually, it's so interesting.
You probably are doing it, maybe by a different name, or maybe you just don't know that you're following that structured path that we spoke about earlier. Because and I know that I shouldn't say this, but a lot of it is common sense. You know, in terms of how you would problem solve and approach a problem, I think the challenge with that is that it doesn't happen like that. So I don't know if we can call it common sense, because we don't approach every challenge and problem with that. So often people will come across that chap or thinks they're Superman and is going to jump the river.
A big
single bound, and then all of a sudden you're kind of waving while they get swept down the river. So it's interesting, just coming back to kind of names and how we call things. And that's in my mind right now, because I'm trying to kind of bring the best of all those different approaches together to have a kind of blended mix, you know, method approach to change and improvement, you know, in our organization. So it's not a case of we'll train you in this or we'll train you in that, or we'll do this thing and it belongs to this science, or it belongs to this kind of, you know, tribe, but actually you don't need to know that as a nurse or a doctor. You just need to know that we're going to do this thing to help you fix your problem.
Well, that's super interesting, and I think that there's two bits really, which I think the first bit is sort of the naming nomenclature of that, which is that, you know, it does become a bit tribal sometimes, you know, and you know, despite what other people say, you know, you sort of see that there are very big similarities. And I've always been a fond advocate of kind of how you bring quality improvement and human factor together, and it's kind of like, oh, there's always a bit of a divide there.
I think that
ultimately, you know, you kind of mentioned about common sense, but you can sort of bumble along and give this a go and sort of figure it out, and sort of that's conventionally how you gather wisdom, isn't it? So it's like, oh well, this is just a way of doing it. I think ultimately, you know, there's numerous different people who have approached these things in different ways, and they've packaged these things up and gone, this is a way of doing it. Now there are absolute there's overlap between those Venn diagrams in terms of like how you can take things from elsewhere. And I think that one of the things I took really, especially from a quality improvement perspective, which is like making change and seeing an improvement from a frontline perspective at the ambulance service, I took everything that I'd learned and kind of applied it in that perspective. And it was it wasn't dependent on kind of using the model for improvement specifically, or lean, or human factors, or building communities of practice. Ultimately, it's using what you have to apply. There's a really nice quote from Bruce Lee, which is that I can't remember the exact one specifically, but he talks about basically take what works and apply it to your own approach from a martial arts perspective. And I think it's like anything really, like if it works for you, take it and apply it, which is my first point. Second point was about just kind of the kind of where quality improvement is going and applying these things. And I think that from a frontline perspective, you do have like that sort of, you can have that generic project approach. I think when it comes to quality management systems, is that there's layers above that, which I don't think quality improvement is the right term to have it, but like when you're building like a high performing organization, like quality improvement is a big part of it. But how you kind of set the strategy in the right direction, make sure that everyone's in alignment, has that golden thread, what's the quality control, what is the quality assurance, and kind of supporting that quality improvement, I think that's when it kind of supersedes the this is human factors and this is lean versus everything else.
That was the next thought I had in my head, Tom, was that kind of with the kind of increasing complexity of the delivery of healthcare and the changing demand of the population in the UK, and the resource envelope that we have to use with healthcare, because it's not necessarily just finances, although that's probably, people would say that would be a root of all the kind of resource, staffing, technology, digital. That kind of quality management approach, I think, is more needed in terms of having that, just as you described, that overall framework that says, it's about establishing, not broad actions, but then taking the right action to kind of get there. But it doesn't matter necessarily what method, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah.
So we've developed a quality management system toolkit in the organisation that I work in, and we've used the quality management journey, just as you described, that what does good look like, what's the strategic, vision, what's your plan, do you know if that's happening, and then if there's a gap between those two things, how do you bridge that? And tool wise, we've kind of built it initially with your kind of traditional quality improvement or lean tools, a driver diagram, a process map, PDSA, audit, different things like that. But we slipped in, here's a little human factors tool. So if you're feeling a little brave, this is going to give you a wee bit more, or here's a service design tool, to help you, and trying to break down those tribal barriers. But you mentioned quality management and. It's interesting because I think we're talking about quality improvement and that's one part of it. But you kind of hinted that maybe your thinking and your approach has kind of evolved from just that singular improvement to that broader sense. Can you talk a wee bit more about that?
Of course, yeah. Almost going back to, you've mentioned about training before, like the levels of complexity, I suppose, have kind of grown over time just from, being introduced to the model for improvement and then lean, and then kind of looking at those quality management systems. I think if I'd just been introduced to quality management systems, it would just blow my mind. And I think that the importance of kind of seeing how things progress over time, I think that we learn that way as well, I think, ultimately. So that's been really helpful. But I think ultimately, from a quality management system, I think what it starts to focus on is, rather than just any one team or kind of group of people within the team, like you start to look at that organizational focus. And we only have a certain amount of time, we have a certain amount of time, a certain amount of focus in terms of what we can look at. I think one of the key things that the quality management system starts to do is, the top of the pyramid, as you might see, is quality planning. So what are those key things from an organizational perspective that you're going to focus on, So, you know, what are your True North goals within an organization, but also what are the things that you're going to work towards, almost again like the milestones, but on a bigger perspective, that you're going to work towards to help you achieve those things. So it might be, you know, one of your True North goals might be safety in your organization. You might want to aspire to be the safest healthcare organization in the world, or for zero harm ever to happen. But really, you've got to translate that into something you can do. So that might be falls, or it might be, you know, sepsis, or, you know, sepsis bundle within a certain amount of time. So you generally speaking, the organizations would have kind of four or five of these things across your main domains, which might be financial, it might be obviously safety related delivery, it might be workforce, and they'd be the kind of the broad aspirational things that you're working towards. So and then there'd be other things as well which would kind of cascade through, but ultimately your organization is really clear on kind of what you're working towards broadly. You would then look at that translation down. So, you know, different parts of the organization will have different problems. But if your organization has a problem with falls, that then cascades to down to every part of the organization that can have an impact on that, unless they don't have a problem with it. So, you know, that falls is less of a problem for kind of children's department, so they might look at sepsis, say, for example. But that's all contributing to that overarching goal, True North of harm. So that's quality planning, which kind of supports that kind of organizational golden thread all the way through, which links individuals all the way through to those big strategic things they want to work towards. You also have quality control, which I think, you know, is becoming ever more apparent now just in terms of how we operate, which is just standardizing our work. So, you know, standard work is a key tool in kind of lean quality improvement, as is becoming now as well. But ultimately writing down what should happen and kind of addressing whether it is happening or not, using process observation. So, you know, we sort of refer to it as sometimes you see the PDSA kind of complexity kind of increases as a bit of a wedge, which is rolling up a hill, and like standard work is almost like the wedge that keeps the PDSA from rolling back down the hill. So you can do all this lovely work, but how does that support that sustainability? And then quality assurance as well. So I think ultimately, kind of linking back to the strategy, is that ultimately you need to be able to see kind of whether you're progressing in the right direction or not, but also as well, you can't do everything as much as we want to. You know, having a handful of things that you focus on from any level really is really important. And so you can refer to these things as sort of drivers, and we refer to them as driver and watch metrics in kind of the quality management space. But having, you know, five or six drivers, which are the key metrics that you're going to work towards and going to be the areas that you're going to be focusing on, with the other things being watch metrics, as we referred to, which is that not that we're not going to do anything about it, but we're going to keep track of them. We're not going to report on them, because actually they're within these realms, or if they're not within the correct area, we're going to look at whether they need to be focused on an improvement. But having that handful of things that you're focusing on is absolutely critical, because I think often what we do is, rather than doing a good job on a small number of things, we spread our resource too thinly, and we don't really ever achieve anything. I can see you smiling there. So
I mean, that's exactly it. And I think that's the kind of the evergreen challenge that we have as improvers is influencing the senior leaders within our organization to say, you know, four or five things that we can really focus on, and just as you described there, thread throughout the organization. Because I think sometimes what you then get is, just as you described, we spread ourselves too thin, or we have a disconnect between what the senior leaders in an organisation think needs to be done and what actually then is happening on the ground and needs to happen on the ground. And as you said, improvement is then, you know, the next kind of step in that journey.
Yeah, for sure. But, I make it sound like super simple, but like it takes a lot of bravery to do that, you know, especially from a leadership perspective. And like these sort of quality management systems are heavily, heavily, heavily focused on leadership and that ability to sort of go, no, we're just going to pause that for the time being. We don't need, you know, 250 different projects. We're just going to focus on these 10 for this year. Those ones are going to pause. We're going to come back to those. Or, you know, the main thing that we're going to focus on for, you know, our breakthrough objective that goes to the whole organization is focus on harm. Or kind of like falls related to harm. But like, that's not to say, you know, all that other lovely work, we're gonna stop doing everything altogether, but like, this is going to be the main focus of the organization. We're going to shift the dial.
Yeah, and you know, a tool that improvers listening to this will be familiar with is the Pareto chart. And
yes.
We often say the Pareto chart helps us identify the kind of the vital few, you know, priorities. And it's not to say that you know, everything in that chart isn't important and doesn't need to be looked at. But again, you've only got so much resource, so much time, so much energy. And just as you were describing kind of the 250 projects, there was actually a paper produced, I think it was maybe the late 1990s, early 2000s. And I, for the life of me, I can't remember the authors, but it was produced and published, I think, by a lean organisation within healthcare. And it was called the Bermuda Triangle. And it kind of referred to projects, and it just described exactly what you spoke about, that we spread ourselves so thin and we have this kind of project based kind of approach to solving our problems, that actually when they looked at it, some of those projects were countermanding each other.
So I got you.
I'm fixing this thing over here and somebody else is fixing the same thing over there, but they're doing it the same way, and in the middle there's no movement. The problem's not been solved because they're undercutting each other, they're basically not helping, and that's happening within the same organization. So there is something about how, again, back to lean and back to what's going to add value
for sure.
To the customer.
Yeah.
And that might be from a strategic point of view, the staff, or it could be ultimately the patients for us. So I suppose my point there I'm trying to make is that none of this is new.
not at all.
You know,
and
both the challenges and the approaches.
Yeah, for sure. And probably one thing I sort of got excited and then forgot that, got to go back a little bit, just about the kind of continuous, because a lot of the time quality management systems are sort of synonymous with continuous improvement. And I think that one of the things that go back to, you know, sort of clinicians not being their job is the way that I suppose quality improvement is sort of seen a little bit differently, especially in quality management systems, which is that, you know, on a lot of the wards that would apply this, or particular areas, they would have you know, like an improvement huddle board and kind of a performance board, which, you know, the idea is that 15 minutes every day they do a huddle, which is that they identify issues that they've that might be their experience on their particular ward, and they can either do some problem solving there and then related to that, running their own PDSAs, or they can use that to escalate to sort of their managers, who, you know, would be holding that quality assurance, and then even escalate from then as well. So I think it starts to take that from a lot more than just being project based, and think there will always be a need for project. And I think that project is almost a bit of a dirty word now. It's like, oh yeah, we don't do projects, we do continuous improvement here. But, you know, sometimes there's a need to go through the different phases in a much more deep understanding way. Sometimes it's kind of like, we need a member of staff on this water day because we don't have them. What can we figure that out? But, you know, if you're having issues with medication errors, like, you're going to need to go into that in more detail. You're going to need to use your Pareto analysis, that type of stuff as well. So I think what the quality management system starts to do is sort of bring that emphasis back to, well, what is in the control of the people in that particular microsystem on the ward, say, for example, and what can they physically change themselves, either in the short term, in the slightly longer term, in like a project type piece of work, what do they need to escalate?
And it's all about the relationships and the culture.
Yeah. Oh, God,
you know,
yeah.
The technical approaches that we're talking about, quality management system or different tools, or whether it's lean or model for improvement and all that kind of stuff, that's kind of neither here nor there, but it's the culture and the relationships. And that's particularly important within healthcare because we have so many different tribes.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's one of the things that we can learn from other organizations, particularly other industries out with healthcare that have implemented quality management systems or really kind of slick improvement systems, is what's the culture and the relationships within the workforce to allow that to happen. So forget about, oh, it's widgets and it's cars and we are people, but actually what's happened within that system? How's it structured? How do they learn? You know, and how do they value that? Versus in healthcare, you come in and you have lots of different tribes, who are part of the same team in terms of care delivery, but when it comes to that improvement and change stuff, maybe less so. And that's a broad generalisation. There's lots of, I think there's an increasing amount of multidisciplinary work around improvement, and we have to and we need that, but that hasn't always been the case, and it isn't always the case. So yeah, that's, I think that's the important stuff. That's the stuff that gets us moving forward.
It is for sure. And I think that, you know, if anything, that these you've probably heard, well, I mean, we've sort of quoted the Pareto principle anyway, but like you know, you sort of hear people talk about the improvement is 20% technical and then 80% relation based, or kind of soft skills, or you know, or any other nomenclature you might try and use as well. I don't think we explore it too well. I think we sort of badge it up as leadership, which you know you sort of can do, but maybe that's a conversation for another day. But I think that, you know, the way that you do bring people together, the way that you communicate with them, the way that you kind of create psychological safety, is all like super, super important for improvement. And I think, you know, that's not really, I don't think it's documented very well, or is even shared and trained well either.
But I would agree with that, and I think that's where organizations maybe need to focus, is how they build that, and whether that's through a technical approach or whether it's through that more kind of move away from a kind of diagnostic approach to problem solving, and maybe that more dialogic approach. So we're not going to just do a fishbone diagram to understand all the causes for a problem, but we're going to have conversations, and we're going to value the time to have conversations in multidisciplinary teams to really get a handle on our problem statement and really get a perspective on all the things that the system needs to do in order to respond to that challenge. And I think that's the area that we need to kind of strengthen, and we need to increase the message around that that's a valuable part of the change process. Because when we say 80% relationships and 20% technical, that doesn't always feel like that.
Oh, for sure, for sure. But again, are they successful then? You know, if it is more of the technical, like, do you tend to find that if you don't front load that kind of relationship building, the engagement, you know, part of the process of going through quality improvement, such as the fishbone diagram, is sort of engaging and making people feel ownership. If you just dropped a intervention, no, this is the thing that works, you know, and people don't feel they don't feel ownership over that, or they don't feel like they've been brought into the process. 9 times out of 10, they're not going to apply it, and that's why this process, that processing, engaging people is so important, I think.
And it's back to something you said in your kind of your opening remarks, Tom. A word that kind of jumped out to me was stealth. I think there's an element of getting people to do this without knowing that that's what they're doing, because not everybody, particularly in healthcare, not everybody needs to be an improvement expert, but
Agreed.
everybody's got a valuable contribution to our understanding of that challenge and how we tackle it in doing it. And I think we turn some people off by going, look, we're going to do this, and here's this tool. We recently done a fishbone diagram in an area, and somebody was asking me, how do we do it? Will we do a session, and will we let people know about it? And I'd say, just stick it up in the tea room and just ask people to give you their thoughts. Make it anonymous. Don't tell them it's a fishbone diagram. Just say, oh, this is a thing we want to fix, and here are our headings, and tell us what you think about people, what could fix this, and equipment. And the feedback was, that was perfect, because folk didn't get hung up on, oh, wow, what's a fishbone diagram? I've never done that. They just come in and say, oh, this is the thing that doesn't work. Oh, yeah, we don't have enough skill mix, put that in people, or we don't have the right equipment, or put that there. And they just did that 5 minutes in a tea break. Now, at the end of a couple of days, the post-its were falling off it because it was that much on it. So that stealth thing, but recognition that we need that technical process then to be able to utilize that and move that on and progress it.
Agreed.
Tom, it's been fascinating talking to you today.
Great.
I'm glad we connected. It's been interesting, and I'm sure there's lots of that conversation that will be inspiring people, or maybe having people go, "Oh yeah,
100%.
that's the same. That's the same where I work." But maybe a chance to look a wee bit more into lean methodology, A3, and maybe make that jump into quality management systems. But listen, thank you very much for your time, and thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Jonathan. It's been a pleasure.
A great chat there with Tom, and a lot that resonated with me in my own practice and conversations I've been having with my wider network, and I'm sure there's also some things there for you to reflect on. Normal service will resume next week back to the short, sharp episodes, but if the chance does come up to have another wonderful conversation with somebody working in improvement, in healthcare or an adjacent industry, we will happily have those conversations and drop them into our routine scheduled episodes. So until next time, take care.